So the Gemara just disproved the last attempted source for the halacha that a single witness is believed. The Gemara now suggests that maybe we learn from the fact that we believe a single witness with regard to when he says that food is kosher. So we see that Eidechaz b'Neman. Maybe the reason we believe a single witness over there is because there's no chazaka that the single witness is trying to break over there. There's no chazaka that says the food is not kosher. However, in our mission, the witness is going against the chazaka that this woman is a married woman. How do we know a single witness is believed even against chazaka like in this case? The case of the Mishnah would be more similar to a single witness who says that a piece of fats that were certain is chalev, and an Eidechaz comes and says, no, it's not chalev. In that case, we certainly would not believe the Eidechaz. So why do we believe in this case as well? Mar says this last case is not similar to our Mishnah, because in this case, in this last case, even if 100 witnesses would tell us it's not chalev, we wouldn't believe them. Whereas in our case, if two witnesses come and say that the man died, for sure we would believe them. So Zakhtamar, maybe we learned from a single witness is believed from the fact that a single witness is believed to say that produce is no longer tevel, and that's something that's no longer... or that something is no longer usher as hegdash or kainam. In fact, regarding those things, if it's his own produce and hegdash and kainam, a single witness is believed because he has the power to remove the status of tel by separating truma and meiser, or of hegdash and kainam by annulling his promise. But if it's not his own produce of hegdash or kainam, we actually have the same question. How do we know a single witness is believed? Rabbi said the reason we are makel and allow a single witness to permit the woman to remarry is since we're so chumerdik with the consequences if she married in error, like the Mishnah said, then that's why we're more lenient with regard to allowing her to remarry. So why? Maybe just don't give her all those chumers at the end and don't be so chuledik in the beginning. The Mar said the Rabbanan wanted to be lenient in the beginning to prevent a woman from being stuck with Nebuch with the status of an aguna. The Mishnah said, Rav said, this is only if she gets married based on the testimony of a single witness. However, she got married based on the testimony of two witnesses, she does not have to leave her first husband. In fact, the Gemara understood this to mean that she need not leave her second husband. That's the Gemara thought. So in Eretz Yisrael, they laughed at the Pesach. They said, the first husband is here, and he's standing before our eyes. How could you say that she doesn't have to leave a second husband? So the Gemara says, Rav says, we're discussing a case where no one recognized the man who's claiming to be the first husband. In fact, if so, why does she have to leave a second husband if she relied on the testimony of only one witness? If no one knows who that guy is, then even Eidechaz should be enough. Mar said the case where there are two witnesses who accompany the man coming, saying that he's the first husband, and they say that they've been with him from the moment he left until the moment he returned, and he's talking to the man who he says he is. In fact, Mar, if it's still a case of two witnesses against two witnesses, which would mean that someone who has beer with her would be subject to an Ashram Talui for a possible Avera in case the man actually is her first husband. So how could she remain married to the second husband? So Shesha said the case is that she married to one of the witnesses who said that the first husband died. He's not subject to an Ashram, because to him, he's a bari that the first husband died. But she herself would be subject to an asham, and therefore should not be allowed to remain with the second husband. Mar said the case is where she is also certain that the first man, that man who comes to claim as her first husband, is takanat, her husband. If so, it's obvious that they can remain married. So why does Rabbi tell us this? Even according to Rabbi Nachman, son of Rabbi Yossi, who's more machmer, the only time they couldn't remain married where there are two sets of conflicting witnesses would be if they got married after they were already conflicting witnesses. However, even he would agree that in Rav's case, they could remain married since they got married before the second set of witnesses came. Mar says Rav is discussing a case where they got married after the conflicting witnesses came and said their testimony. Rav asks, the Bryce says, we learned from the pasuk that we physically force a kohen to divorce a woman that he's asur to keep his kedusha intact. Now, this case can't mean that the pasuk teaches us to force him to divorce a woman in a case similar to Rav's, where she did not marry one of the witnesses, and where she was for sure she was not sure if the man was her first husband, because in that case she would possibly have the status of a zayna, and there would clearly be an obligation of bezin to separate them. Rather, the case must be where she married one of the witnesses and herself was sure, and yet we see that we still force him to divorce, which is not like Rav said. Rav says kuhuna is dealt with more stringently, is different. Another teretz gemara, when the braisa says we force him, it means that before we allow the kohen to marry her, we search high and low to see if there are any contradictory witnesses. Third teretz gemara, the cases where they got married after the conflicting witnesses came, and the braisa is following the view of Rav Nachum, the son of Rabbi Yossi, who said that they'd have to separate then. Rav Ashi said that Rav means that she may remain married to the first husband like we were explaining initially. Shmuel said, when the Mishnah said that if she got married based on the testimony of a single witness and the husband then returned, she has to divorce them both, that's only if she doesn't dispute his claim that he's the first husband. However, if she does dispute it, she may remain married to the second man. And what's the case? If the returning man has two witnesses who corroborate his story, then how does her dispute allow her to remain married? If the case is where there's only one witness who corroborates the man's claim, then this would suggest that if she does not dispute the claim, then she may not remain married. But why would that be so? Ula has said that whenever the Torah believes a single witness, that witness is given the credibility of two witnesses. If so, this later single witness would not be believed to contradict the first witness who said that the first husband died, because he's like two. Mar said the case is where the man's claim is corroborated by two witnesses who are not valid witnesses, and we're following the view of Nehemiah, who says that when one witness is believed, we follow the testimony that has the most people saying that testimony, meaning even if they're not valid witnesses. Therefore, in this case, we follow the two people who support the man's claim. Another test of Gemara, when the first witness is not someone who is typically a valid witness, that's when we follow the side that has more people saying the testimony. However, had the first witness been a valid witness, then even if there were 100 not valid witnesses against him, it would not be considered a case of equal. It would be considered a case of only equal doubt. The Mishnah said, "Tzricha get mizeh umizeh." In fact, it makes sense why she needs to get from the first husband because she was truly married to him. However, she was never really married to the second husband because the first husband was alive. So why does she need to get from him? Huna said, "We're concerned that people will think that the get from the first husband predated the marriage to the second man, and we're letting the second marriage dissolve without requiring a get. Therefore, we require her to receive a get." The Mishnah later says that if the woman only received kedushin from the second man and the first husband in return, she may go back and live with the first husband. Why don't we require the second man to give a get over there as well, so that people don't think that we're allowing kedushin to dissolve without requiring a get? The Mishnah says she actually does require a get in that case as well. If so, we're allowing the first husband to take her back after she was married to another man, which is Isser Mahzir Gurusha Soy. The Mishnah follows her based Ben Kippur, who says the Isser only applies when the woman had already entered into Nisuin with the second husband. In fact, the Mishnah there says that if the second man gave her a get, she does not become possible to a Kayim because of that get. Now, if a get was actually required, as we just stated, how could we say that the get would not make her Usser? The Mishnah says, in the case of the Mishnah, the people will realize that the Kedushin was done in error, and we need not be concerned that people will think we're allowing a Kedushin to dissolve without a get, and therefore without no gets given. In the earlier Mishnah, why don't we also say that people will realize that the Nisuin was done in error? The Mishnah says, even though people may say that, the Rabbanim penalized her and required her to receive a get. Why don't we penalize her in the later Mishnah as well? The Mishnah said, in the later Mishnah, where only Kedushin was done, and she therefore had not actually done any Isser, she never lived with the second man, the Rabbanim didn't feel the need to penalize her. But when she entered right into Nisuin, the Rabbanim felt the need to penalize her.